welcome to your life, your IT life to be specific. IT Life Radio is for you, the IT pros, the technologists, the geeks, the makers, and the futurists. I'm your host, Executive Editor Dave Wagner. This is our first show, but starting every Wednesday, we're going to be here at 3 p.m. Eastern to talk about your life and what is important to you, from your career and your workplace to new technologies, entertainment, and gaming. If it is a part of your IT life, it is a part of this show. Today we're talking about those pesky kids in your workplace, the millennials. Yes, the ones you're always complaining about for going to the bathroom together in groups and texting each other even though they're sitting right next to each other. Those self-entitled, whiny brats with no skills begging for a promotion on their first day. To talk about millennials, I'd like to welcome Bill Grady. Bill is a brand strategist, IBM corporate headquarters. Bill is an award-winning designer and inventor with 9 U.S. patents issued and pending. He is currently focused on establishing IBM Watson as an essential worldwide brand. Bill lives in New York City, where he's an MBA candidate in the class of 2016 at NYU. But most importantly for this discussion, Bill was part of research IBM put together called Myths, Exaggerations, and Uncomfortable Truths, the real story behind millennials in the workplace, that busted some of the myths surrounding those whippersnapper millennials. Welcome, Bill.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, Bill, I'm glad you're here. I want to start off with a really simple question. What do you think of my portrayal of millennials? Spot on, right?
I got such a kick out of it. You know, it's what I used to think, too. I'm a millennial myself, but based on all the research that we had done, I thought that was pretty consistent until we actually did a study of our own and found that a lot of that was actually not true.
Oh, well, if I had known you were a millennial, I don't think I'd have invited you here. I thought you were an old guy like me.
Yeah. No, just don't call us kids. We see so often.
So seriously, tell me a little bit about this research IBM put together. Why did you put it together? What did you learn? You said you discovered that some of these myths weren't true. What did you discover was true?
That's right. Well, you know, we didn't set out to actually dispel any myths when we began. We just had observed that the millennial generation was becoming really influential, both as our customers and as our employees. They were driving a lot of the transformation at IBM. So we were interested to learn a little bit more about the impact that the millennials were having. And when we started doing some secondary research, we couldn't actually find that information out there. So my team and I went to IBM Global Business Services, and within that group, there's an organization called the Institute for Business Value, and we worked with them to do a comprehensive study of over 1,700 millennials and people from other generations all around the world. And what we did is we looked to see where there was a variation from the mean, where the millennials were different or the same from others, and that's when some of these myths started falling away.
Great. Well, what fell away? I mean, being a Gen Xer myself, I still can't stand you guys. What all these things I've been saying about you, what isn't true anymore?
It's funny you say that, and actually, it's interesting when you see that some of the millennial myths actually are more, some of the negative things that people say about millennials are much more close to what the boomers are. And it appears like the boomers are projecting some negative qualities on the millennials that are actually more characteristic of themselves. And I'll share an example with you. The millennials have a sort of a bad reputation for being this generation where every kid gets a trophy. Right, we see here in the U.S. and actually all around the world this myth that because in soccer everyone got a trophy, when they're in the workplace they all think they deserve to be commended for hard work and not for results. And actually, when we polled that question, we asked people of all generations, do they think anyone should be rewarded for contribution, or is it rewards? We found that the boomers, more so than millennials, thought they should be commended for their contribution.
Yes, that is by far my favorite part about this study. I encourage you guys, if you haven't gotten a chance to read this study, to do so. We linked it in an article previewing this radio show, and we'll put that link up again. But one of the most fascinating things I've found about all of the different results is how similar we are across generations and how little variation there really was between millennials, Gen X, and baby boomers. Is that a fair characterization? Are we more alike than we'd like to think?
That's absolutely true. Yeah, and our advice, a lot of the questions that we get are how should we manage millennials differently from others, and actually a lot of the emerging questions are what are millennials like as managers, because they are now half of the world's workforce. So there are a lot of millennial managers out there. But actually, our advice is to treat your team as individuals, because actually there weren't large differences in sort of psychological differences, for example. And several of the myths we busted were around that point. So I'll share with you how they are different, which was very nice. But let me just start by one other myth that's fun. I believed, and many of us do, that the millennials job hopped more than others. And actually, we found that the millennials have the same wish for stability in their career that everyone else does, and they change jobs for the same reason that everyone else does. The top two results for all generations is more money and a better work environment. And so, David, this is clearly a case where people were more similar than the myths were made out to be. And our hypothesis is simply that the economy was poor. So millennials had to change jobs because they were underemployed or unemployed. And people were projecting that they were doing it for some novel reason, but it was really just a result, perhaps, of the economy.
That makes total sense. We just did an article about job hopping here on IT Life that showed it is an amazing how much pressure the average IT pro is under to change jobs, the amount of solicitations they get from other companies, the realization that the only way they're going to make more money is by moving, they're not being rewarded enough in-house. It makes total sense that millennials would feel that way coming out of college in the middle of the recessions and the other sorts of pressures they've been under. And I'd like to talk more about that. But before I do, I just want to remind our audience that going on right now, while we are having this discussion, is another equally interesting discussion online. There is an online text chat going on. If you're not part of that text chat, please dive in there. You're going to learn a lot about your fellow millennials and boomers and Gen Xers and everybody else in there, and they're going to have a great discussion. If you're not a part of that, then you're missing out. Also, Bill and I are going to join that discussion at 12:30, so put any questions for Bill in there, and we'll be sure to answer them. So Bill, back to job hopping. One of the things that you mentioned also that I think goes on with that is the concept that you need to treat people as individuals. One of the reasons I've seen that people are job hopping is that they don't feel like they're appreciated by their managers, they're appreciated by their organization. Is this something that you're seeing as well? Is this a generational thing? Is it because we're young, we don't feel as appreciated, or is that also not a generational issue?
Well, a couple of things come to mind. One is that we were surprised. Our data, one thing that sort of jumped off the page from the data is that people of all generations show a surprising lack of understanding of their company's strategy. And so one of the lessons that came up was all managers can do a better job at communicating with their teams and communicating the strategy so that everyone understands what they're working towards. But then the other thing at play here is there's something fascinating about how millennials just expect to be heard or want to be heard, and they feel like they can contribute so much to the organization. All generations, the number one career goal they had was to make a positive impact on their organization. And as organizations who are trying to appeal to millennials, it's really in our best interest to make sure that we're accepting all these best ideas throughout our organization and engaging everyone. And so using things like roundtable discussions and communities to make sure everyone is getting involved and helping, because they're yearning to make an impact, and they're hoping to be heard. So there's a lot of opportunity here to actually bring the best out of them.
Right. So it sounds like what you're telling me is that there's a communication gap, not only in terms of age, but in terms of the top of the company talking to the bottom of the company and the bottom company talking back to the top of the company. The hierarchy is not transferring their strategy well enough to the rest of their company, and the rest of the company's ideas are not being heard by upper management. Is that a fair thing to say?
It's possible. We see that some companies with a strict hierarchy might not place the high level of value on some of those ideas from the bottom of the organization, when in fact that's so valuable. Right now, I think all organizations need all of these great ideas.
Right. How do you foster that communication? Do you text a millennial? Is that the best, the best way? What is 21st century management communication like these days? Is it changing?
It is changing. One thing we see is the millennials are so comfortable and used to using social media, where the value of the information is in sharing the information, and the old hierarchy said that there was a strict way that things were communicated and they weren't shared so broadly. So there is some tension there, I think, around people who have an instinct to share broadly and others who have an instinct to hold on to that knowledge and get power from being the person with the knowledge. So we see some tension there, and that brings out actually where it was that we saw some differences. So some people might be wondering, well, what is it that makes millennials different? And really it stems from their comfort level, their mastery of technology. They think that their mastery of technology gives them an advantage in the workplace, and it's really some of things around, say, the way they communicate, the way they learn, or the way they shop. They have different instincts, behavioral instincts, that have been taught through never knowing life without the internet. And that's where the key differences stem from.
Right. That makes sense. So I'm on the young side of Gen X, I should say. And I'm one of the earliest digital natives. So I feel like I sort of recognize some of that sort of reality. One of the things that shocked me about this study is that I never really thought about where the age cutoff for these sorts of generations are. And millennials are 34 and younger at this point, which means that an awful lot of millennials are managers right now. And that sort of surprised me. I still think of them as the interns, right? they're not the interns anymore, right? So how is that changing the enterprise and management? What are these early millennial managers doing to shake things up, or how is that attitude changing the enterprise and the way people are perceiving them?
I think that is really why we're having this discussion. We're seeing significant impact now. And our theory is that their impact had been compressed a little bit here. Because the boomers weren't able to exit the workforce when they had originally planned to, because of the recession, they were kept in the workplace. And so the millennials weren't able to have that impact in a normal cycle as they would have had. So once the economy got better, once the boomers and the major markets started shifting out, and then in the emerging markets, you had these huge numbers of young people entering the workforce. So now you're seeing all of a sudden this tidal wave of change as the workplace really transforms and these new ideas are starting to come out. So I think what we're seeing is really a pretty significant impact. And I'd like to ask other people to think about their organization, and are they seeing some of these changes too? Are they seeing a large number of people who are eligible for retirement and a large number of young people who are kind of making a lot of noise in the business?
Right. Yeah, I think that's an important thing. If you are in the chat room right now, why don't you go ahead and chime in on those kinds of changes that you're seeing? That'd be a great thing to be talking about while we're talking about this as well. One thing I'd like to ask you, Bill, is this an urban phenomenon more, or a developing world phenomenon more than it is, throughout the country? Or are we seeing millennials more in major cities having this impact, or is this really a nationwide or a global global wide phenomenon?
This is the first global generation, truly the first global generation, because these differences that we've talked about have stemmed from access to the internet. It was really fascinating to see the same trends that we're seeing here, and I'm in New York, we're seeing those in China, we're seeing them in emerging markets. So my team was a global team. It included Western Europe, Eastern Europe, South America. We had a colleague in Sao Paulo. She's seeing the same things there. And in fact, earlier this month, I traveled to Sweden, and I saw this firsthand. I really enjoyed it. I'll share a quick anecdote with you. I was talking about helicopter parents in the U.S., and that's an expression that, you know, jokes about parents who are hovering around. The millennials, on average, after they've left the home, communicate with their parents once per day, and it's extraordinary, and it's unlike anything in history. So I was talking about helicopter parents, and in Sweden they said, "Oh, you mean curling parents?" And the sport, the Winter Olympic sport. Imagine a parent. I love this the visual here. Imagine a parent sweeping the ice in front of the stone as the stone slides across the ice. Isn't it an apt metaphor? So it's very much a global phenomenon.
I love it. We should collect names for them. So it's slightly different. We have tiger moms, and we have lots of those. We should make like a coffee table book or something out of all the different countries' names for that.
Involves some travel, I'm on board. Count me in.
Sounds good. We'll get a grant or something. So this is fascinating to me. In a sense, what you're talking about is that millennials are communicating with older generations on a very regular basis, and yet we have this perception in the workplace that they can't deal with each other. So that, you know, their parents are boomers, or maybe Gen Xers, depending on, you know, where you fit and think, and yet these generations can't get along together. So if they talk to their parents so much, if they can handle the helicopter mom or dad, why can't they handle the helicopter CEO?
Well, our data shows that they actually, the boomers and the millennials, get along very well. And it's interesting in the IT world, where you can imagine at home, sometimes the boomers might ask their millennials for some help with technology. And we think the same thing happens in the workplace. Some roundtable discussion, this wasn't proved out in a theory, but some roundtable discussions suggested that you might have, for example, a CEO ask the millennials in the organization to help determine what the strategy should be for, like, if they're going to adopt, for example, a social business platform. It's common that the CEO will ask some of the millennials in the organization to help make that recommendation. So some of the same things you see in the home are happening in the workplace. And millennials love mentorship. There's some great things that can happen with cross-mentorship. And where there is some friction that we've seen, it's actually between Gen X and Gen Y. So I think there's some room there for some better communication.
Right. Is that like a hazing thing? They're too close? You know?
Maybe.
I went through this. Now you're going to go through it. Is that what that's like?
Could be. There might be some of, you know, I was just thinking about that statement you made, and I heard an HR director say, you know, when we were young, we wanted to make an impact in the organization too, but no one cared what we had to say. And maybe the difference now is that this large influential group is needed, and so for the first time, maybe it's sort of a bit different that people in business and any organization to connect with millennial clients need to have their millennial employees heard. So maybe that's part of the shift. Maybe that's part of the hazing that's happening.
Right. Yeah. Nobody listened to me, so you're not. I'm not going to listen to you. Yeah. That's a sad, but I can see totally natural feeling on a certain level. One of the things that really fascinated me about the findings, and I don't want to read off a bunch of numbers on radio because I'm sure that's really boring, but I do want to share really quickly things that were interesting, which is you asked how true different generations felt about these two statements, and they were, I make better decisions when a variety of people provide input, and it is important to have a group consensus. And one of the things that was really interesting to me about those two is that that was the place where baby boomers really didn't agree with millennial and Gen Xers. Mm-hmm. For instance, with the it is important to have a group consensus, only 39% of baby boomers agreed, where over 60% of Gen Xers agreed with that statement. So is that a problem? Because on the whole, it's not always true, but on the whole, organizations are led by older, more experienced people. And clearly, they're not as interested as people farther down the chain in driving consensus or bringing people in. Is that something that needs to change?
Collaboration and communication is definitely the area here that needs some attention. We do see that boomers are less likely to ask others in organization for their input, and we see that X and millennials much more so prefer that sort of collaboration. So there's the potential there for some issues, and I think, and when we look at how many people in the organization say they don't know what the company's strategy is, then it suggests that there has to be some more collaboration and communication.
Right. I know it's impossible from just this study to make this conclusion, but do you think when all the baby boomers exit the enterprise, all of a sudden we're going to have this nirvana of collaboration, or is it being old makes you less capable of collaborating?
No, we were careful to make sure this wasn't about age, but about generational tendencies, and so we tried to filter that out in the data. So I think it's worth noting that a lot of people are millennial-minded. I think you yourself mentioned that you're millennial-minded, and so this isn't a battle between different groups. It can help us transform our organizations to be the very best they can be if we really understand the millennials' expectations. So they have these high expectations, and actually our key takeaway from this is that if we can really understand this strategic persona when we make marketing materials and we make new products, we can have the most modern, the most advanced products and material out there. And in fact, what we see is everyone else likes that too. So the boomers are, the forward-thinking boomers anyway, are just as likely to like this really advanced stuff. This is the status quo we're finding for everyone is no longer sufficient. And a strategy for being, evolving and transforming your organization is to look to the millennials and what they need. And I think it's good for all of us.
Right. Well, I think it sounds good for all of us. That's for sure. And I want to talk about a word you mentioned. Forward thinking is something I'd like to talk about. But before I do, I'm also looking forward to the fact that it's only about 6 minutes until Bill and I head to the chat to answer some questions. So I just wanted to remind people, if they're not in the chat now, to hop on board in that chat, start the discussion. Bill and I are going to be there shortly. So speaking of forward thinking, what's next for this research? What questions did you not get an answer to that you're hoping to get an answer to in the future?
Well, I think what's next for us is really trying to share this more broadly. We're changing definitions here. When you go to Wikipedia and you search millennials, it actually says that they job hop and that they, a couple of these myths were part of the vernacular. So what's really next here, I'm so honored to have this opportunity to chat with you and to start to share this information because our team is really excited about its value. We think it's first of its kind, and that's demonstrated by the fact that we're literally changing the definition about these millennials. So what the next step is to help share this as broadly as possible. All the information is free and it's online. And we hope that businesses will come to us. We can help talk through this a bit. But, we hope that everyone takes this into their everyday practice.
Right. What do you think happens when we do that? I'm a writer, so I find words have a lot of power. What happens practically in a workplace mm-hmm. if we start changing definitions and changing the meaning of words like millennial?
Well, yeah, and that's another thing we can do. We can actually stop using the word millennial. We've been using the word forward thinkers, the phrase forward thinkers, because when we found, so we boiled this down to 10 characteristics of millennials, totally stripped age out of it and looked at 10 characteristics. And we found that those were things that everyone enjoyed. It was about getting information more quickly. And so the forward thinkers are all of us. And, this information can be used to really progress. So there's an example that I'll share with you how we used it. Sorry, that's what I was building up to. our new products. So we've been using this information to change the way we design products here at IBM. And the first that we launched was a platform as a service developer's tool called Bluemix, and the second is our new answer to email called Verse. And by focusing on the needs of this group, we think it allowed us to really leapfrog the competition and create something that's meeting needs that others hadn't identified and creating the most modern tools for all of us. So I'll share those as two examples of what you really can do. You could change the way you design products when you really understand this segment.
Right. Well, that sounds fascinating because obviously not only are you getting to sell more, but your whole market is shifting towards a way of thinking, so you need to be on top of that. What's a quick way in which you change the way a product is designed for a millennial?
I think the number one thing that we're looking at is they have an expectation for instant gratification. If you've never known life without the internet, you think anything can come, in your pocket, get the answer immediately. So knowing that, it really changes the way we do marketing, the way we design products. It's about making sure that it's not just about click to find more information or click how to buy. It's click to buy. Be able to come to the website, make a decision between your company's product and another company's product, be able to easily engage with the organization. So there's you could do so much wonderful brainstorming around your products if you just think about a customer who, or an employee, for that matter, if it's internal systems, who expects instant gratification. It really drives us to do our best work.
Right. So this sounds very data-driven. This feels a little out in left field from what we've been talking about, but do you think this is a real opportunity for big data? We have a lot of big data experts that are on iWeek regularly. Is this something that, millennials are demanding data? Is that a fair thing to say?
Yes, absolutely. So paper two shows how to B2B, it looks at B2B marketing to millennials as purchasers in organizations. And it was fascinating to see how they make business purchasing decisions. And one of the keys was data analytics, and that was more so than other generations. So the talking point there is they make business purchasing decisions based on data analytics and advice from friends and family, which was fascinating. That wasn't something that came up for the other generations at all.
Wow, fascinating. So it's a nice combination between data-driven decisions, but also socially engaged decisions that we think of as something that's important for deep business relationships. That's really cool. I wish I had more time to talk about that. Unfortunately, we're really reaching the end of our time. So I just have to ask you one more wrap-up question, which is, if I'm a manager with a team of millennials, or I am a CEO with a team of millennials, or I am a millennial, you know, in an organization, what is the first thing I should do to try to break down some of these stereotypes and work better together?
Communicate, ask for their input, and treat them as individuals, because you'll find that in a team with a smaller sample size, 20 people, 10 people, everyone will have their individual characteristics, and they don't want to be treated as millennials or boomers or Y. They want to be treated as friends and people in the organization, employees, colleagues.
Great. Makes sense to me. I wish we had more time to talk about it live. The good news is we're now going to go into the chat room and talk to all of you guys. We're out of time for today for the live portion. Before I say goodbye, though, I want to let you know that next week's guest will be Rodolfo Galen from Aldebaran Robotics. We're going to be talking about the role of social robots in the workplace and in our lives, and we're also going to be talking about whether robots are going to take over the Earth. So please tune in next Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. In the meantime, I'd like to thank our guest Bill Grady for stopping in. And I'd like to thank each of you for showing up and being a part of our very first episode. Remember, this is your IT life. The rest of us are just paying rent.